And we're here with Tom Morris, founder and president of Morris Associates Incorporated in Washington, D.C. Tom, welcome to the show.
Pleasure to be with you, David.
Great.
Happy to be one of your first guests on HR Power Hour.
You know, we're having so much fun doing this show. I got to tell you, we've talked to some great people across the country.
You have.
And it's really been a lot of fun to do this. So, and I appreciate you joining us because our topic today is a little bit different than what we've talked about in the past because we've had a lot of great speakers on talking about, like last week, we talked about the SHRM organization. We talked about HR professionals. We've talked about outplacement coaching. We've talked about search. We've talked about a lot of great things, but we have not talked about retreats. And we think that this is an area where we're seeing companies think more and more of doing it. But why would a firm or organization do an offsite retreat?
There are probably almost as many reasons as there are organizations doing offsites. Basically, it's an opportunity for people to step back from their day-to-day demands and have an extended period of concentrated focus, usually on things having to do with the organization's future or about specific issues that the organization is engaged in.
Do you see themes or topics that sometimes are very key to them making a decision to do this?
Team building comes up a lot, but we see the retreat, we see one of the outcomes of almost all retreats almost automatically to be team building. So usually we're looking for other reasons why they're doing retreats, and when we do them, if there are work things that they're working on, plans or projects that they have to be putting time into anyway, we try to find out about those, and if we can work those into the other, whatever the other theme of the retreat is, we try to help people actually get some work done. I went back and I looked at different retreats that we've done, and if I may, I'll just touch on a couple of the reasons.
No, that would be great.
We were asked to do them. One was a fast-growing bioscience R&D firm, and they were going into about their third year of operation, and they were anticipating a lot of growth. And they had been working as a small and formal organization, and they wanted to get ready to be working as an organization and be bringing on a lot of new people. So there were issues having to do with staff buildup, change of the organization, and what to expect and how to get ready for it. Another 25-person practice group of a business, international business consulting firm had not had a director for the practice group. Actually, they had several directors over the last 2 years, and it didn't look like they were going to get another one, and they were told to, why don't you guys run it for a while and self-manage? And so we had an off-site retreat to help the organization figure out what were the issues around self-managing and how are they going to operate in a little bit of a different mode than they had been before, where they'd always had a director. We had a large veterans organization, a national veterans organization that had over 200 representatives who came together, and they were all going to be putting on benefit fairs, health and benefit fairs for veterans when they went back to their local areas. And there were a couple of different themes and types depending on the area, but we broke people into cross-functional groups from different parts of the country and put together 10 different plans for a health and business fair that then people had access to depending on what the key theme was that they needed.
Well, there certainly are a lot of different reasons to do them.
There are.
And certainly when you think about the value that that gives to an organization to let them focus and go out and do these, do you see that there's a huge return on investment for the organization, or how do they measure that?
In fact, it's difficult and virtually impossible to measure it at the retreat. You may be familiar with the Kirkpatrick model of measuring effectiveness of training, and the same would go for a retreat, Donald and James Kirkpatrick. And the four levels are reaction, did people like it? Second is learning, did they learn anything from it? Those two things you can actually measure at the retreat, usually with before and after surveys or questionnaires, that sort of thing. But then the other two are behavior in back in the workplace and actual results, ROI, if you will. Those are much more difficult to measure unless you're building in with the retreat a follow-up system that's actually going to be measuring behavior changes, and you figured out some way of monetizing results and measuring the results.
And I think that's the key, isn't it? Because when you talk about an organization spending, especially today, some dollars mm-hmm. doing this, when you get to the end of the day, the CEO or the CFO or COO really want to know what the ROI is going to be to make it worth the value for them to put it in there. And I do think the key is follow-up. There has yes. to be a measurable of follow-up that, you know, are going to hold people accountable. I don't know how many times we've all gone to trainings or your events or retreats, mm-hmm. and we leave and we go, that was great, I'm all fired yeah. up, but then there's nothing to hold me accountable to what I learned or did.
When we do a retreat, we take a process approach, and we look at it as a pre-event, event, post-event process. And there's the planning that goes into the retreat ahead of time, working with a planning committee, if appropriate, interviewing key executives, as well as line managers, either with focus groups or surveys on the issues that we're going to be covering. And then there's actual delivery. And that pre-retreat, that planning can take weeks. We're doing one right now, in fact, where the actual retreat will be in the fall, and the organization is updating their 3-year strategic plan, and then they're going to be presenting it to the board and toward the end of the year. And we're working on a retreat for toward the end of the year with them, but we're working with them and staying in touch with the whole planning process as it goes, with an eye toward what is going to happen at the retreat and what do we want to come out of it with. The retreat itself, the event, we try to make a very interactive experience for people, not a lot of lecture. We've got specific deliverables that we're trying to help people to put together at the retreat. When we put objectives together before the retreat and then put the agenda together, we're not doing it in terms of what topics are going to be covered or what people will be talking about, but more about what will they do, what will they be producing. And then there's a post-event process where we usually develop quite a number of flip charts, and we take the flip charts back and we edit them, we clean them up, we put them into a nice form, we send them back to people as an after-action, both reminder of what was accomplished or decided and actions that have to take place going forward. And very often in the planning process, in the pre-event process, we are looking at that post-event process even at that point, saying, okay, if we do it this way, what's going to happen after the retreat with this? So we're always very conscious of just what you're saying. What are people going to leave it with? Will they be using it? Will it be acted upon? But we don't want to just go into a retreat and cover a lot of subjects or uncover a lot of issues or concerns that people have and then not have some way of doing something about it afterwards.
One of the questions that always comes up, certainly when we get asked about retreats, is how are retreats different from training or just basic training that we could do in our office? So if you could kind of explain what would make it a big deal that they're going away somewhere. I mean, we sometimes hear about these retreats where they've done an Outward Bound program or they've done something totally different. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit what your thoughts are in terms of the value of that and really getting them away versus just training in the office or training in a hotel conference room.
There's two issues here. One has to do, I think, a little bit with facilities, but the other has to do with why are you doing the retreat? Why do you want to do it? Are there particular issues or concerns that you have? And by the way, there's a whole bunch of reasons why people should not have retreats. If you just have it looking like an extended regular meeting or a series of training events, you could probably do that better with a series of training events or with extended meetings. Sometimes retreats are done because it's a tradition. They do one every year. That's not necessarily a good idea to have one. Some CEOs and leaders, organization leaders, do them to reward people, thank them. It's not a good idea to use retreats as rewards because people don't really see them that way. If you want to give them rewards, give them rewards. But I wouldn't pull people together. Let me go back to your question. There may be some training in a retreat, a training session or two on a particular topic, especially if it's a 2-day or a 3-day retreat. But most of the time, there's not training. There's interaction between the people on, again, strategic issues or more immediate issues that they need to be dealing with. And in terms of facility, we definitely recommend an off-site meeting, if possible, for a retreat. Again, the idea being helping people to step back from their day-to-day demands and activities and have a concentrated time for focus on whatever the issues of the retreat are or whatever the themes of the retreat are. So off-site tends to be preferable. A facility that is set up for retreats, that has breakout rooms where there's going to be good food, the consideration is it going to be overnight, and how are we going to use the time in the morning and in the evening as part of the retreat where people are having fun. A facility that has windows, we highly recommend. Very often we will go to a location that's in the woods, on a river, on a lake, something like that. So it's really getting away. And we find that we can do this sometimes just outside of many major metropolitan areas. We don't have to go, you know, across the country to do it. We have done some what might be called retreats in conference rooms or in a hotel room. But again, usually in a hotel room, you've got no windows. The hotel really isn't set up for breakout rooms. It can be done there, but we're very sensitive to both what is the purpose of the retreat, how many people will be involved, and will the place that they go to be comfortable, and hopefully a place that even when they walk in, they just feel that they're away and that they're in a different environment from a creative point of view.
You talked a little bit about going to these retreats and certainly talked about the facilities a little bit. Tell me a little about the length of time, and I certainly recognize, as we've done them before, mm-hmm. that it depends on what the topic is and what we're trying to get out of it.
It does.
But on average, you know, what is a retreat typically last, and you know, what is the process that somebody would go through to do this?
Typically, I'd say 1 or 2 days. We wouldn't automatically recommend a longer one just because it's longer, but we can usually get more done. Plus, it gives the opportunity for people to socialize at dinner. And the socialization, the interaction between people, both on subjects and just with each other, especially if it's a group that comes from a lot of different locations and they haven't spent a long time together or they don't get to see each other very often. We're very concerned with the free time that people will have to just meet other people and be with other people in addition to the work that we're actually getting done. We've done some very effective retreats in 2.5 days where people would arrive, say, late in the afternoon and then have dinner together. And at dinner, we'll have just a 10-minute maybe kind of overview of what time we'll get together in the morning and kind of what the ground rules are. And by that time, people will have received an agenda with the objectives on it. But that way, they get to settle in. They get to rub elbows with a couple of other people, relax a little bit, get the camaraderie going among the group. And then when we start the next morning, we can start fresh. We can start fairly early. We can get into the subjects quickly, spend all day doing that. Again, we've got a dinner at night. And then the next day, whether it goes for a full day or it goes to, say, mid-afternoon so people can go back, it gives us 2 nights where people are together, and it essentially gives about a 2.5-day retreat.
Now, you just mentioned something interesting that I think mm-hmm. I want you to elaborate a little bit on. You mentioned if people are coming from different locations, and certainly, you know, if you're talking about a company that has many different locations, is it different if somebody is doing a retreat for a building or an office where people see each other all the time versus someone who's maybe coming in from a retreat from many different locations because they have remote locations?
Yes. The logistics are certainly going to be different if people are coming in from many different locations. Usually there is more emphasis on cross-fertilization between and among individuals and groups, people getting to know each other better. We did one retreat where the organization provided for its clients 3 major services, healthcare, finance, and frankly, end-of-life care services. And they had 3 different staffs that handled each of those. And they very often, there were a lot of silos, and those people didn't get together a lot. So in that case, a very big part of the retreat and what was needed was opportunity for people to be working with others that they didn't normally work with, to get to know each other and get to know what they did, try to break down some of the silos.
I hear what you're saying, and I think it certainly depends on the situation.
Yeah.
We're talking with Tom Morris, and we'll be right back.
If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
Packers.
Vikings.
We come from different places.
Uptown.
Downtown.
We come to different conclusions.
Half empty.
Half full.
But when we live united, we make a real difference in the building blocks of life. Children succeed in school, families gain financial stability, the health of our neighbors improves, and suddenly so do our communities. Real change won't happen without you.
Live united.
So give, advocate, volunteer, live united. Sign up today at liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
And we're back with Tom Morris, founder and president of Morris Associates. Tom, thank you so much for being on the show.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, I would like to talk to you a little bit about planning a retreat with an organization and what the process you would use. We've talked a lot about where, when, and how, but mm-hmm. You know, what do we do now with the planning process?
Well, one of the things we're looking for is answer to what I'll call the five W's and the H, kind of a classic from journalism. The five W's being who, what, when, where, why, and the H being how. And so we're looking at who's going to be going, what do you want to get out of it, what do you want the attendees to leave with, or what do you want the organization to get out of this at the end. When is it scheduled? What's your time frame? Where do you want to do it? Do you have a place, or have you thought about types of places? Why are you doing it? And that's a very big question that we spend a lot of time on. And then how will we actually do it? And again, we're using that pre-event, event, post-event. So we're looking at it not just as the retreat itself, but we're always keeping in mind what's going to come out of this at the end. Where possible, we work with a planning committee. We get to know some people, they get to know us, they become, if you will, a little bit kind of thought leaders for the retreat. We almost always want to do at least a survey of the people who are going to participate, and we send it out and ask them three questions. What questions or issues would you like to see covered at the retreat? What do you want to leave the retreat with, and what do you not want to have happen at the retreat? And then we really pay attention to those responses, and if we think it's appropriate, we may also have a focus group or two with half a dozen or seven or eight select people who the organization would consider representative of the population that's going to be at the retreat to go over the objectives that we've developed, usually with management, go over the agenda and the basic things we're going to be doing and getting feedback from them. The input that they give is valuable, plus they now become spokespersons for the retreat, and they're letting other people know about it. So when people get there, there's not a lot of apprehension. Sometimes they also will give us examples of specific types of problems having to do with the issue that the retreat's going to be on, and we're able to work those specific problems into work exercises at the retreat in a way that doesn't identify particular names or particular situations. But we've had people come up to us after and say, that was unbelievable because that's exactly the issue that we've been dealing with in my department. Well, good. You know, we knew that. But there's a lot of work that goes into that and figuring it out.
Do you find that, obviously, this seems like an obvious statement, but I'm not sure that it always is, that unless you get really good cooperation, unless you get really good data and feedback from the either the planning committee or the people involved about what's really happening at the organization,
mm-hmm.
just doing the retreat for doing the retreat without having real good examples makes a big difference, doesn't it?
We've had situations like that where we've recommended not doing a retreat.
I can see why.
If they're unclear, if there's not an unclear focus. For example, sometimes they've got some individual issues, and so they want to make it a retreat so they don't have to deal with the particular individuals. And then what happens is we're making individual problems into group problems. That's not a good reason to be doing a retreat. If you've got problems or issues with particular people, you really should be dealing with those separately. So the scenario you just described, just having a retreat for the sense of getting away, again, if you people don't really appreciate it that much as a gift. They will go and do the work, but if you want to give them a gift, if you want to reward them, do it another way.
No, I think you're absolutely correct. Do you see the trends right now in an increase in retreats, or how are you seeing the market?
Sure do. We are working on several, even as we speak, and we were not for the last several years. The retreats just went down a lot with the economy, but we're seeing an awful lot of people where things seem to be coming back, and or the organizations are realizing that, yeah, it's a time of uncertainty, but that's the pool we're in, and we're going to have to work with it. So how do we do it? How do we make do with what we have? But we're seeing a significant increase in the number of requests that we are getting for retreats throughout most of this year.
Do you think retreats could be considered a retention tool?
Yes, if they're done well and they make people feel good about themselves and the people are listened to and they've got an opportunity to participate and accomplish something. I mean, we've helped organizations to put strategic plans together in retreats. So again, there's a really important pre-event, event, post-event process we're looking at. They may do a bulk of the work in the retreat, but there should be materials that are lined up before the retreat. Often there's pre-work that people will be doing. But if we can bring a group together and have them produce a product that they need to have, very often people feel good because they contributed to that, they participated in it. I think if that's a particular issue in a company, we would spend time talking about it more specifically with the organization. You know, if developing people, giving them an opportunity for career development is a key thing we're trying to do, then we're going to be looking at parts of the retreat to be doing that specifically.
How involved should the CEO, COO, or any of the C-suite level individuals be in the retreat, and does it matter?
You know, I'm going to break that into two questions, at the retreat and before the retreat. It's important, especially if there's a retreat committee or a facilitator, that authority to make decisions is spelled out early in the process. One of the worst things that can happen is to have a committee put together their ideas for a retreat, work with the facilitator. They've had minimum input from the CEO or the top executive. And then when it's presented, the executive says, no, I don't want to do this. This isn't what we need. We need something completely different. Well, that shouldn't have happened. So we like the top executive to be involved, certainly in the beginning, to know what they think needs to come out of this and make sure we're in tune with that, what they don't want also, and then keep them involved at least periodically as the objectives and the agenda are coming together so that we make sure that we're on the same page with the CEO. In terms of at the retreat itself, usually the CEO will be a member like everyone else. We make it a point when we do a retreat that at the beginning of the retreat, usually the top person, the CEO, usually will open it with a welcome and a couple of remarks, and then formally turn it over to the facilitator. So we've got delegated authority, if you will. And also so that the top executive can be freed up to become part of the retreat and not have to worry about leading it. At the end of the retreat, when we finish up on whatever the last day is, one of the last things we do is turn the meeting back to the top executive. Now, another thing that we've done very successfully with a number of groups is we may schedule in an afternoon a question and answer session with the top executive. People can submit questions on 3x5 cards, which we collect, and then we facilitate the dialogue, the Q&A, if you will, by using the cards that people have written questions on, and they can ask anything they want to the CEO. And that sometimes opens up to more discussion, too. So that's another role, but that's a specific event in the retreat where the CEO or the top person has a particular role. There may be other parts of the retreat where other people in the organization will have key roles.
You know, this whole topic on retreats is certainly one that, you know, I know a lot of companies are thinking about out there, mm-hmm. and certainly I appreciate the time that you've gone today to go over this with us. So, Tom, I see you've written a book, Career mm-hmm. Mechanics, Solutions yes. to Common Career and Employment Issues. How's it doing?
We're just about to go into our third printing.
That's fabulous.
We just talked about it yesterday, in fact. My partner told me we're running low on these and we want to get more. It's been popular. It is a series of essays that I wrote over about a 12, 15-year period for different publications, magazines, newspapers, and that sort of thing. And I had a suggestion from somebody, why don't you collect them all and put them in a book? And I was quite amazed because when we collected them all, we had about 50 essays. A lot of them are for people who are looking for employment, but we've also got some essays and articles on people having difficulty at work and what they can do about it. We've got a number of articles for human resource executives, alternatives to a reduction in force, how to bring about corporate culture and how to impact corporate culture. It's a nice book. People have said that they like it because it's kind of like a reference book. They can just look in the table of contents and see what subject they're interested in, and they don't have to read the whole thing. They can just go to that and read one or two essays.
No, that's great. Well, congratulations on your third printing. That's fabulous.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much, Tom, for your time today.
David, I'm honored to be on your show.
Okay. Have a great day. And here's this week's HR Tip of the Week. Workplace characteristics, generational differences, do they matter? Well, let's talk about the veterans generation. They prefer to work with managers who are directive and identify a clear direction, take a logical approach, set long-term goals, are fair and consistent, spell out clear job expectations, and are respectful. What drives them crazy? Managers who seem to be too touchy-feely, are indecisive, worry about making unpopular decisions, use profanity and slang, and are disorganized. Think about it. Next week on the HR Power Hour, we're going to be spending a full hour with Diane Durkin from The Loyalty Factor. She builds employee, customer, and brand loyalty. Catch us every week at 2 p.m. on News Talk WLOB 1310 AM or streaming live on WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.